Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, 30 for 30. 30 for 30 podcast and the undefeated present the King of Crenshaw. This four-part series examines how Nipsey Hussle's life, death, and legacy impacted the sports world, particularly the NBA. Here, DeMar DeRozan, Isaiah Thomas, DeMarcus Cousins, and others explore the realities of life as a black man in America, Nipsey's dedication to South LA and his community, and how Nipsey inspired millions. The marathon continues. The King of Crenshaw. Listen now on SiriusXM, Pandora, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, the Peabody and Emmy Award-winning 30 for 30 film series presents Once Upon a Time in Queens, a four-part documentary event about the city, the swagger, and the wild ride of the 1986 Mets. This documentary explores the epic tale of one of baseball's most dominant and iconoclastic teams and their legendary World Series comeback. Hear from former Mets players and fans, including Daryl Strawberry, Keith Hernandez, Bill Burr, Cyndi Lauper, and more. Parts 1 through 4 of Once Upon a Time in Queens are available to stream on ESPN Plus and the ESPN app. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is Foxworth Friday. Dominique Foxworth, what's going on?
What's happening?
Hey, man, you know, we got us a week of NFL action. It was fantastic, something along those lines. You get the fun that I'm glad I ain't got. You be out here Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday getting on TV doing this NFL talking when everybody wants to overreact right away. What was Tuesday like after the Ravens lost that game?
Man, so Tuesday, we've had so many referendums on Lamar Jackson that I feel like people are exhausted. So we didn't have that, but we did have to like rethink. And that was one of the overreactions that I think is valid. Like rethink our expectations for the Ravens this season. All the overreactions, that's the one I'm buying into because important people got hurt. Marcus Peters is the most significant injury on that team because we saw in that second half, they were still trying to blitz. Like they still had Jimmy Smith, Marcus Peters, and Marlon Humphrey. They didn't have all them guys. And Derek Carr was just carving them up. And that's going to be a problem going forward because they're not built to play defense in a conservative way. So I think that team is actually in trouble. And on the other side of the ball, like I wasn't concerned about the running back injuries because I was like, all right, well, Lamar's the running game. Even his presence, even if he's not running the ball, his presence makes the running game work. What I didn't take into consideration was starting running backs are starting running backs not only because they can run the ball, but because they can pass protect. And that game ended because the running back couldn't pass protect. And he got in and stripped Lamar Jackson. And that's something that I didn't take into consideration. Maybe it's easier to find those guys. I don't know. But that certainly cost them on the game on Monday night.
Well, the thing is, ain't none of these cats get to the league playing running back by pass protected. Right? And I say that because I remember when Ezekiel Elliott was in the draft. And people just kept throwing out there, but you can play him 3 downs from day one because he could pass protect. And they're like, it was so rare, the idea that a running back could come in and pass protect. Like, I remember Clinton Portis. Like, if you want to make an argument for Clinton Portis in the Hall of Fame, never mind all the, like, actual monstrous running stats that he put up, is that dude was a pass protector at that position. And I mean, he was laying dudes out, right? You know, like, and immediately, like, that was a big deal. What got me was, I understand if your running back struggle with pass protection, but when your tackles do, ooh, we got a problem. our man, Big Al. Big Al was over there looking like whackness.
I saw a stat about Ronnie Stanley, the pressures he allowed in that game. It was like more than pressures he allowed in an entire season. So like he's coming back from an ACL tear. In a big old contract, which I certainly think he deserves. But as someone who had a torn ACL, I wouldn't have thought that it impacts the offensive line the way that it could. But I know, like, it's not easy to come back from that. So if he's not going to be able to pass protect, the rest of that line really ain't built for it. And just like you talked about running backs, they don't get into the league because of their pass protecting. These linemen, they don't make their living in Baltimore by doing these pass sets. Like, they are running something different than most other people. So if you're going to have a defense that's going to give up points, you're going to have to do a lot more drop back. And Lamar Jackson, given his athleticism, he's going to hold on to the ball longer than most. This could be a bad recipe for the people I picked to win that division.
No, but don't you worry. He ain't going to be holding on to the ball that long because it ain't going to be no option. Like, they're not going to give him enough time to actually hold on to the ball too long. Look, on that right side, they was running right through that thin blue line. They was just busted straight. I mean, it just, like, as I'm watching it, and, like, I did around the horn, and Sarah Spade made the point about, like, Lamar Jackson's going to put more on his shoulders. He didn't put this on his shoulders. Yeah. They jumped on them bad boys. He out here handing it off to a dude that we ain't never heard of. The tackles are blocking like people we ain't never heard of. I actually thought Lamar played pretty well. Like, yeah. I find that whenever he's on national TV, and Greasy was doing color on that game, and he was talking about, there's Lamar going through his progressions. That's the improvement. I'm like, no, he's been doing that since he was a sophomore in college. Yes. You can't play for Bobby Petrino unless you do those kinds of things, right? Like, I think people had a drastic misunderstanding. Bobby Petrino did not start running a new offense for Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson went in there and ran the incredibly complex Bobby Petrino offense. And now he's out here with your man Roman, who ain't added nothing to his playbook in 10 years.
The going the progression thing, and I was guilty of this too before draft prep, because all the Lamar Jackson highlights you see are like incredible Lamar Jackson highlights, and people show those over and over again because it's nothing like it. But if you watch a Louisville game, yes, sometimes his accuracy was up and down. And I've talked about this piece a bunch of the times that Mina and I wrote before the draft about Lamar Jackson. He sat in the pocket and goes through his progressions. Like, he's a reluctant scrambler. He's like an aggressive runner on design runs, but he is a reluctant scrambler. And that is not new. You would think that Greasy would read the stuff that I write, you know, I mean, or listen to me every now and then and learn something, but it's wild that people do that.
It's everybody. Like, if a quarterback is able to move, people's brains just get all locked up on trying to figure out, like, so you can actually do two different things? Is that the part that you are telling me? And I just thought he was driving back there in that game against the Raiders, and it was like, 1-2, damn, here they go again. Yeah. Now what we about to do? Because he was like me. They got that big 35-yard run from Tyson Williams. Yeah. That apostrophe do a work, by the way. like that apostrophe doing work in his day. I was like, you talking about Tyson? Oh, my bad. Tyson. Yeah. He got that run, and then the running backs weren't giving you anything else. Like, I think the running backs are important people, to be fair to them. They're not saying you can get literally anybody to go play running back. They're just saying that the margins between them might not necessarily be so great. Now, what I worry about for Lamar on this, for his own sake, amen. Next game is Sunday night against the Chiefs. You lose two games on national television. We as a nation, those national TV games affect reputation for people so much. Case in point, I think Tyrod Taylor is still overcoming the last game that he played with Cleveland, where he played bad and then he got hurt and then Mayfield came in. And now his Tyrod stinks from then on out. By the way, granted, they were playing the Jaguars, but Tyrod balled down there in Houston. Bald, I tell you, bald. But if, man, they come out there and lose two games on national TV, and all they got to do out there now is go play the Chiefs. And, you know, say what you want about the Chiefs. They ain't the greatest run defense, so maybe you got a chance if you Baltimore there. But if they get caught having to throw with them tackles out here looking like boo-boo, that's going to be bad news, because the Chiefs are built for that. Like, oh, we're ahead? Let's go.
Man, so I got tickets for me, my son, and my dad. Got them in the offseason to go to this game. My son's favorite player is Lamar Jackson. We were planning on having this good, like, experience, football shared between the generations. It was going to be beautiful. It ain't going to be pretty. Ain't going to be pretty. They asked me on Get Up the line. I think the Caesars line was 7 points. They were like, is that real or ridiculous? They beat them by 2 touchdowns last year. And the Chiefs are at least as good as they were last year. And the Ravens are in mid-season form, and not in a good way, in an injury way. They are in mid-season form in an injury way. And it's going to be a problem, because maybe you could get away with losing your run stuff and defensive tackle when you're playing the Chiefs, not the DBs.
Like, I was watching you, you were talking about this during the game, because you had mentioned before that you played in Denver that year, that it was, we bring in 8 every play, right? And that's basically what Baltimore was all last. And I noticed in that game, they were at least looking like they were bringing 8 every play, but it did seem like Martindale realized at some point, man, we're going to have to just pretend sometimes. Like, some of these guys going to have to fall back some.
Yeah, they absolutely are going to have to. But the one thing that we did in Denver, we were, like, manufacturing this pressure, was we weren't trying to fool nobody. We had 2 plays, essentially, on defense. We lined up in a punt rush formation, and you would either do a blitz or bail. And you either you go ahead and everyone goes and we're in zero coverage, or they bail out and the four linemen go, and then we play like cover three in behind or cover four, something like that. The reason why I thought that worked was because you couldn't have any time. You couldn't buy any time. So they're running zero blitzes from off coverage, thinking that they're going, and that works fine. Not from off coverage, but from their normal alignments. And that works fine because you trick people. But if they know that you're doing it, you get stuck in a situation where people are doing double moves on the goal line. And that's just unfair to DBs. You can't cover double moves if you're in zero. The point of zero is it got to come out quick. I can cover anybody for 2 seconds. That's the concept, but y'all going to make them do it for 3 seconds? Nah.
Yeah, that 1 second, man. That second between two and three is significant for everybody involved.
Oh, absolutely. The thing about the overreactions, though, I think you're right about like it being on prime time. It's interesting who we give the benefit of the doubt to, because like people are overreacting to some degree to Aaron Rodgers, which I'm like, if anybody deserves the benefit of the doubt, or somebody like that deserves the benefit of the doubt. But nobody's really coming for like Josh Allen like that, which like surprised me comparing those two guys. And maybe it's also just about the high profile nature of that game. Like the Saints and Packers game was, I felt like, a bigger deal because we think of both of them as like real contenders in a way that we don't think about the Steelers, but maybe we should change the way we think about them too.
Yeah, I guess, man, because Rodgers did not look good. And especially after everything that happened in the offseason, I was actually surprised that the national consensus was a little kinder to him. And again, with Josh Allen, people spent 3 years hoping it would happen, and then it did, that they're not going to bail out on it at this point. But I watched that game. I basically watched all of that because I was curious to see how Roethlisberger looked, and he looks cooked. So I would not say that Drew Brees looked cooked last year, but it was obvious that he was at the end. But I wouldn't say that he looked cooked, because he could still do things, right? Like, you can still do Drew Brees things and figure it out. And we don't think about Roethlisberger as like a thinking man's quarterback in the way we think about those other guys, but he still can figure out how to manufacture some things around what his physical limitations are. But he is physically limited. There's just no way around it.
And I mean, they're different players. So Roethlisberger and Brees are different players. So Brees' arm was cooked, but Brees is incredibly accurate. He had Sean Payton, and Brees is incredibly football smart.
Right.
And that matters. Ben Roethlisberger, I think, has more guile on the field than intellect, if that makes sense. So like his experience allows him to make things happen, but he was a quarterback that was always kind of dependent more on his physical abilities than his mental ability. So a cooked Drew Brees could like cut and paste some things together. And Ben Roethlisberger managed to cut and paste some things together, but it's not something that I expect him to be able to do for the duration of a season, because he's always relied on like being big enough to shake people off and having the athleticism that is clearly gone to make something out of nothing. So I can't see it working out for him as well as, not that it was super great for Brees last year, but I can't see it working out for him as well as it did for Brees. It's going to have to get these short passes out and hope people can make something happen with it.
Yeah, it worked out for them for week one. Because the thing about Allen is, and I do think that Allen has earned enough from last year where you can have a bad game, even if it's the first bad game. And this is what I'll give him if nothing else. They think me and you hate him, right? Like they out here ready to clip this part right now. But when Josh Allen was bad before, it was hilariously, embarrassingly bad. Yeah. You know what I mean? Right. He just didn't play well in this first game. Like that for me was like a significant leap in the way that I looked at him. Where I was just like, okay, he just had a game where he did not play well. But he also, and this is a Lamar Jackson problem too, though, in a different way. Man, Josh Allen loose with the ball. Like when TJ Watt came around on that play and got that strip sack, you could see that coming from so far away. Because Allen got out there, forgot what was going on. And I was like, oh, I've seen this movie far too many times. Right. This going on the ground.
Yeah, I mean, I think he deserves the benefit of the doubt. Honestly, I think all the good quarterbacks deserve one game. And he was a great quarterback last year. I guess I'm just surprised to not hear it, considering that he had such a long track record, 2 years of like below average play. He had 1 year that was outstanding. It just made me think like how we're watching Jameis and people are like, we know Jameis can do it. It feels like to me, Jameis and Josh Allen have similar kind of careers so far. Except like Jameis did all his bad and all his good in the same games. And Josh Allen was like, I'm going to give you all this bad up front, and I'm going to give you all this good in this season. And it's made us, and I guess it makes sense, because if you can put together a full season, including playoffs, of stellar play, my expectation is that you're going to be able to do it again. So I understand it, but it's going to be wild when Jameis come out here and throw four picks next week.
Well, I tell you, all the optimism and benefit of the doubt when it comes to Josh Allen go wind up biting him in the keister. I talked about this on Monday. He's not the guy to have out here throwing the ball 50 times. You're going to have to do something for him. He's going to need some help, because just basically every quarterback needs some help, right? This is not just particular to him. But if you just come out here and decide we're going to throw the ball 50 times, and then he ran it nine more, right? The running backs, I think, had 15 carries, some total, for that game. Nah, man, you ain't going to be able to pull that off. And I'm telling you, man, they're going to be sad if it don't work out in Buffalo, because they gave them all the reason in the world to be optimistic. I forget what ESPN show it was. It may not have been ESPN. It might have been like one of the network pregame shows. A lot of people got the Bills going to the Super Bowl. Oh, no, dog.
I mean, your point about them asking a lot of Josh Allen, like it, and maybe it wasn't 50 times a game, but it felt like last year that's what they did. They threw a ton, I thought. Like, it feels like that's what they were doing. No team in the league is more reliant on any one player than Baltimore is on Lamar Jackson.
Right.
But I think Josh Allen is up there as far as the team lives or dies by him. And if he gets hurt, it's over, because they build this offense around the things that he does really well. They brought in Stephon Diggs to help him in the areas that he is not good, but they are dependent on him. I mean, more than, I think it's like him, Dak, Lamar, and that's it. And like, I put Patrick Mahomes behind them as far as how much the team is relying on them, frankly.
Yeah.
And I know how crazy that sounds, but that's true.
But we saw them win some games with Matt Moore last year.
And they was nice with Alex Smith.
Yeah.
The formula hasn't changed.
We have the future, the present. They like Josh Allen. You're the opening act, the headliner, and the after party. The after party. Like, he is that. And he seemed like a good dude, so he ain't going to say nothing about it. But this way, your agent got to go be the jerk.
Yeah.
Hey, man, y'all got to spread this around. Y'all going to get my dude killed.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Let me ask you, as we just got to bounce it around the league here. I watched that Bears-Rams game, and I had two thoughts about it as I watched it. Number one, what is clear to me from every interview that I've heard with somebody from the Rams during the offseason, they talk about Matthew Stafford, and even in the course of watching that game, and Stafford certainly didn't play poorly, but I felt like the big plays were plays that me or you could have made, right? Like dudes walking around butt-naked open. No shade to him. They were there. But after watching that, I can't tell if they all think that Matt Stafford is just so damn good, or they just think he is so much better than Jared Goff. And is that really all it's going to take for them to get there, is better than Jared Goff?
I mean, that offense, maybe. We talk about this a lot, is like, what type of quarterback are you going to have? You're going to have like a mediocre quarterback, which to me is like a very good quarterback qualifies as like a franchise quarterback. If you are above average, then, yeah, we better sign you up and keep you here. And then there's another level where it's like, can you make two or three plays in the second half? Because that's all we need of you. And then there's the other level is like, we need everything from you. And can you provide that? I think all they need is that tier just above starting level quarterback. Like, they only really need, considering how good that defense is, how talented that defense is, and how well I expect they're going to perform. All they're going to need from Matt Stafford, assuming everything goes according to plan, is make two or three, maybe four plays in the second half of some playoff games. And that's why they're excited. Yes, he's that good. He mess around and get the MVP on the strength of that, because they could be a team with the best record in the league. And then we have all this whole story about how he came over there and he's the reason, when it's not really going to be him. It's going to be like that team is nice and they ask a little bit of him.
I mean, he is at best the third best player on the team.
Oh, yeah, at best.
At best. I mean, because they got them two dudes on defense. Dude, Aaron Donald is just hilarious to watch. Like, right now, and maybe there's a recency bias in this, I feel like the two defensive players that are like the most entertaining to watch, because we've neutered the linebacker. Like, the linebacker used to always be it. Aaron Donald and that damn Vita Vea.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that.
Oh, my God. Like, watching the second half of that game against the Cowboys, I was just like, how humbling does it have to be an NFL offensive lineman? And, like, what's this other guy going to do? He's just going to grab me and throw me backwards.
If somebody just ran past me, that's what it must feel like. Because, like, you're a lineman. Like, your whole reason for being is that you can't just get tossed around, and he is tossing people around. And I know Vita Vea is great, but watching Vita Vea on that game made me really appreciate Aaron Donald, because Vita Vea is the size of somebody who should be able to do that.
Yeah, Aaron Donald's 280.
And be pushing people. You remember, it was the first game of the year last year against the Cowboys, the same team, right? Wasn't that? It was the Thursday night game, maybe. It was early in the season anyway. You remember that clip that we kept seeing where Aaron Donald was taking guards and centers back into Dak's lap? And I was looking at him, but you little. It is mind-blowing. And also, I don't know if you caught this, but Vita Vea got these high school running back clips running around the Twitterverse right about now. We talk about all the rules that they put into pro football to keep it safe. They're not getting paid. As soon as they put that man in the backfield, somebody's mama should have came down there. I don't know, the superintendent. Somebody should have said, no, my boy ain't getting in front of that.
Dog, he was like, I can't even remember who the guys were. Like, hey, Connor Williams got it once for the Cowboys. I think it was a number 68 who was out there getting it too. And it's one of those where it gets on film and you like, I'd like to see you go out there and do that. Right. Like, because I remember in the Super Bowl, they had been hurt for much of the year last year. And I hadn't given them any thought as I look back at all the reasons why my Super Bowl pick was so bad. And by the way, all of them I could immediately realize as soon as I saw the game. I saw one Vita Vea play, and I was like, ah, damn, yeah, I didn't think about that either. Ain't that something? Yikes.
Yeah, we all, I made this comment last year. It's like, immediately after the Super Bowl, I was like, man, that's what drugs feel like. It's like, I was high on Mahomes. The thing that was so obvious to me, and that I know, is like, if you can't win on the line, you're going to lose. But I threw all that away, because I was high on that Mahomes, like he can fix anything. And I still to this day believe that if they had at least one tackle,
yes,
he would have been all right. The problem is they have no tackles and they was losing in the middle.
Bruh, I told you that I was at the house and they put up the graphic for the offensive line and I saw those five names and the only one I recognized was Mike Remmers. I was like, oh, I have made an error in prognostication. This isn't going to go the way I thought it was going to go at all. And it did not. Like, I'm trying to think of any other moment literally in my life where I just looked up and was like, oh, damn, I'm wrong. Like, Mark Schlereth talks about, I forget which game he was. We just talked about just one game. And I imagine you've been in this situation, too. Coming out the tunnel and you just see what the crowd is on. And you just look at everybody and be like, well, boys, don't think it's our night tonight before anything has even happened, right? Like, you just peep the vibe, and you're like, nope, not going to happen. That's exactly how I felt when I saw that offensive line pop up on the screen. I was like,
oh, my goodness.
Not going down.
I can't get off the high school thing because Vita is a yard away from 300-pound men and manages to generate enough force to throw 300-pound men with just a yard of runway. He playing running back in high school, getting up a 20-yard head of steam and running at 140-pound safeties. Like, that really, like, the referees, and imagine that. What happened was there are a bunch of coaches, grown men, 30, 40 years old. There are referees out there, 40, 50 years old. There's stands full of adults. And they watching this like, yeah, this is a good idea. Right. We don't need to stop this.
That's nice of the coach to not do this every play.
Yeah, that is really nice. That was, I appreciate that, but he shouldn't do it at all. It's criminal.
Now, I feel like you should be able to just line Vita Vea up at running back, and you can just throw passes all game long, right? We got to put 9 in the box if Vita Vea going to be back there, because can't nobody do it alone.
I mean, I feel like he could fall forward for 3 yards. These are grown men, and it's all professional football, so he's not just going to run through it like Swiss cheese, but if you don't got 8 in the box,
yeah,
he going to fall forward for 3 or 4. You're going to be dealing with 4th and 1 at worst. They give it to him again.
You mentioned Jameis a little while ago, and there are a lot of, I do think, interesting things happening in the NFL this year in a way that feels like it's a little bit uncommon. But Jameis, maybe it's because I was so high on him his freshman year at Florida State that it always feels like that maybe that guy can come back around, because that guy wasn't even the guy sophomore year. And there were some moments during his career, but again, his problem was always throwing the ball to somebody else. And maybe that Mr. Magoo was the issue. You know what I'm saying? He went out there and he got the LASIK. And I mean, he threw 5 touchdowns or however many it was in that game, but he didn't play well. Like, he didn't play badly, but they didn't ask for very much out of him in the course of that game. You already calling the 4 picks for this week, though.
I don't want it to happen, but I'm not accepting this LASIK thing. I feel like LASIK is equivalent of I'm in the best shape of my life. You know, like, we need a reason. We want to give a reason. This is like, I changed to a plant-based diet. That's what this is to me. Like, you don't need to be able to read the name on the jersey to play football. Like, he wasn't colorblind. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that LASIK is the solution unless he believes it's the solution. You know, like, it has a placebo effect in that he's like, all right, I'm better now because I can see. But like, I don't think that's where the interceptions were coming from. And I said the thing about being in the greatest shape of your life. I actually think that's more important than anything else, because it's true for Jameis. Jameis was running. He was running the ball, and it opened up other things for that team because he was scrambling and running. And Jameis looked like he was in the best shape of his life. And that helped to me more than him being able to like see better. I have a hard time accepting that LASIK is going to make the difference.
I'm with you. I do think Sean Payton is in that new Andy Reid space. And what I mean by that is, like, people don't remember it, but as good as Donovan McNabb was, he got hurt a lot. And so they'd bring in a Coy Detmer, a AJ Feely. I forget who the other one was. And Andy Reid will figure out a way to go 4-0 with them cats, 3-1 with those cats, that they would just, in effect, pull off the street and just throw into the game. And Sean Payton pulled that off. They won those games with Taysom Hill. They won those games with Teddy Bridgewater. Yep. And so now it's the 16-game experiment. Because one fun thing about that with Andy Reid is the real experiment was going to be Kevin Cobb. That year they decided to make him the starter, and they bailed on that after a game. Yeah. They were like, nah, let's go with Michael Vick. Like, I ain't got nothing to prove to you people. I ain't no magician. I'm just a coach.
Yeah, I think he'll be fine if they continue to not ask a lot of him. I think that they're in a situation that they can, because Alvin Kamara is incredible, and he'll take a lot of pressure off of Jameis. I think the decision-making, to me, like, I don't think that really changes. Maybe you can make the decisions easier, but the Jameis experience is kind of a trap. And maybe Sean Payton can avoid this, is that he's so amazing when he's good that you just want to keep doing it. You know, like, potentially it could have worked in Tampa Bay if they just ask him to do less, you know, because when you ask him to do a little less, he might give you 5 touchdowns at 145 yards or whatever he had. You ask him to do 300 yards, there's going to be some interceptions in there if you expect him to do that every week.
Well, it's like I said about Rex Grossman when he was going. The problem with Rex Grossman was not that he was terrible. The problem was he could be excellent. The game plan was always around the possibility that he was excellent, because that's the highest ceiling thing that you got. And then he come out here looking like, you know, Rex Grossman. And it's like, damn, we didn't put in the what if he stinks plan today. Like, we don't quite have that in here.
Bringing up that Orange Bowl again. There you go.
Oh, I forgot he was on that team. Orange Bowl.
Oh, yeah,
that was that year that the Florida people tell you he should have won the Heisman.
You talk about that thing you were saying, the Slayer said you walk out and you know it's not your day. We was hype in Miami. We were like, yeah, we are good. We can play with anybody. We barely lost to Florida State. That's the only loss all season. Then we got out there. Was it Alex Brown? Maybe it was Alex Brown. He was like defensive end that they had. I remember, like, going to field and you do warm-ups and just like your t-shirt a little bit or something like that in shorts. We out there, we looking at them like, we got one of them, maybe? They had a whole roster full of them, and we knew that it wasn't going to be for us real early in that game.
Man, I actually remember watching that game because it was like, yo, Maryland on the come up. Okay, that's what's up. I had never seen nothing like this before. Yeah, like I really had. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And then, and that's right, that Florida team lost late. And you're like, okay, they might show up. They might not really be into it. No, no, no. They were pretty engaged, actually. They were ready to play.
Gave everybody their evening back real quickly. Go ahead, go see a movie. Do whatever it is you want to do.
No, that's like that year where Alabama played Notre Dame in the national championship game. And I think I must have gone up to Bristol for something. I think I must have gone up to do First Take or something like that. So I guess it was a Monday night and I caught the flight home and I knew with the flight, I wasn't going to see the first half, but I was going to land about halftime. I was going to get to the crib and I was like, I'm not calling Notre Dame go win this, but I think they're going to keep it close because that was at the point where basically every team that had beaten Saban in that run had a quarterback who could move. Like that was the common denominator between all the teams that had beaten Saban at Alabama through that point. And they had Eric Golson. I'm like, okay, well, Notre Dame, they're going to give them a game. Like, they undefeated. Like, man, I got off that plane. It was 28-0. I ain't see a minute of that. I was just like, all right, cool. I'm going to just get back to the shack and lay it down, man. I've had a very long day.
Oh, my goodness. I was not fooled by that one. I mean, when in doubt, when in doubt, you go with them SEC guys because Notre Dame had an offensive line at that point, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that could give you some hope. But that's generally the difference in most of these games is...
Well, the thing was, Notre Dame had a defense, and that defense was led by Manti Te'o, and this was after, you know...
Yeah.
Well, actually, no, we found out about all this after that. He was going through it, and we did not realize that he was going through it at the time. That's still the wildest story in the world.
So wild. Then they did a documentary or something on that.
Yeah, Don Van Natta. I sat for it, actually. Did something.
Oh, yeah. I remember seeing it. It was good.
I only got in for like one little clip. I was offended at first. And then I looked at the way it went. And I was just like, oh, okay, you didn't waste my time.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool, Don. We still cool. We still homies. You know what I'm saying? But I was kind of like, damn. Like, I consider myself to be the best documentary talker in the game. Like, if you got a documentary, it don't even matter if I know something about it. You come sit me down. I give you them bites. You can put them in. And I was like, damn, they ain't really need it. And then I watched it. I was like, oh, I understand. I see what's going on. And I think I was just a little too skeptical of everything for the actual tone.
You wasn't going to let them tell a story.
Nah. And they weren't trying to tell like the story, like in the African-American sense. They weren't trying to tell a story. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But I still was like, yeah, there's a lot here. I still don't really know about. Right. That was when we realized, wow, this internet thing, we're in it forever, huh?
Yeah, that's depressing as hell. What'd you feel about the Browns coming out of that Browns Chiefs game?
Yo,
you on team Moral Victory?
No, that was team Troll. When I was like, can you guys still appreciate moral victories? Because that was a moral victory. No, I was absolutely trolling Browns fans when I did that. And I was going to ask you the exact same question because I feel like now that you have put it to me, I feel like you're just as confused as I am about what exactly I'm supposed to do with them. Because do you realize they're going to have Myles Garrett on one side and not even Jadeveon Clowney on the other side? Jadeveon Clowney right next to him on third downs.
Whew.
Right? Because I forget who made this point. I know, actually saw Clowney mention this. He was like, the thing about him playing in the middle, because none of us ever expected him coming out of college, that where he would do his damage would be inside. And it's that guards are the worst athletes in the NFL. That's not even shade. Like the way Schlereth put it, I thought was really interesting because he said they're the smartest, which whatever works, right? But his point was they turn tackles into guards. Sometimes they'll turn a center into a guard. They'll turn wide receivers into this. They'll turn this position into that. They'll turn defensive ends into defensive tackles. Sometimes even vice versa, all of that. You ain't never seen them turn a guard into nothing but a guard. Like a guard plays guard. Most people who play guard are there because there's a reason they can't play something else. Quentin Nelson, for example. I think I asked Jeff Schwartz about this. I was like, I can't understand how he's 6'5", 340 pounds, and he's this good, and he plays guard. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. And he was like, and he gave the explanation. I think it's something short arms or something like that.
Yeah.
But he is a guard because of something he can't do over there. And so Clowney, who is athlete supreme, in there against them guards.
That's a mess. And then you put on top of it, like, that makes it more difficult to double. And it also forces the hand of the offense to where they're going to slide to protection most of the time. Like, it gives you an advantage as a coordinator. As you're like, all right, you want to be able to blitz away from the slide. They're not going to be sliding away from the Clowney Garrett side. Like, that's not going to happen. I think my takeaway from that game that you managed to dodge the question.
Oh, no, I don't know what to do with them. That's like, I do not know what to do with them because they have so much talent. They just wear them uniforms. And whenever I see somebody in them uniforms, I think they're going to lose. And, yeah. You know, and like Baker Mayfield, how well do you think he played? Because I thought he looked really good and the numbers in the end looked really good. But the second half, I did not think was cracking at all.
Nah, I mean, I think you nailed it. But I think he did great for what they need of Baker. That's what they need. They need him to hit those play action passes in the first half, build up a big score. There's no reason to believe that he's going to be able to consistently outduel anybody in the fourth quarter. The tough thing about Baker is he struggles when they know he got a pass. That's true of a lot of quarterbacks. That's not bad. I still think Baker deserves to get paid. I think he's their starting quarterback. He gives them the best chance. I'm not saying move on from Baker, but the expectations there are Super Bowl not because of Baker. The expectations there are Super Bowl because they have no flaws. Like talent-wise, they have no flaws, and they're deep enough at most positions that they could sustain a couple injuries, which most teams cannot. So you always imagine, we talked about it earlier, you imagine quarterback's going to have to make in the playoffs, he's going to have to make 2, 3, maybe 4 throws in the second half. I think a better description is you're going to have to make 4 plays. And the point is you may not need Baker to make those plays. Like it might be Myles Garrett that makes those plays. It might be Landry. It might be Chubb. Somebody's going to have to make those plays. It's normally a quarterback. But they have so much talent. I mean, it could be John Johnson, like Denzel Ward. Like, they have so much talent. Somebody is going to make those plays, and that's what's going to win them, or that's what's going to get them to the Super Bowl if they get there.
Yeah, Baker's solid, yeah. Right? And to be honest with you, if you take a quarterback with the number one overall pick and he turns out to be solid, it worked out okay.
Yeah.
Like, if you didn't trade up for the pick or anything like that, you know, but if you get a solid 10-year option at quarterback – and that's the thing. He's solid. It just didn't help his cause that he put out the y'all been doubting us video, you know, and then went out there and then they lost. And I've said this for the longest about Baker. I hope he manages to find some measure of happiness that doesn't involve proving somebody wrong. Because at some point, you shouldn't have anybody to prove wrong anymore.
I mean, that's the thing that we learned from Jordan is you make up people to prove wrong. But Baker's not going to have that problem. Baker's going to have plenty of doubters. He's not going to elevate to that level, which is so hard when we have these conversations because it feels like people interpret it as you being like negative about these players. But it's like I just try to be honest about where they slot. And being a starting quarterback in the NFL is fantastic. Being an above average quarterback, incredible. But he's not going to get to either of those levels that are above him, which is fine. They can win with it, but they better win now because they're not going to be able to continue to draft like this and they're not going to be able to continue to stockpile talent. And you're going to get to a point where the Browns might be the Browns again, but their window is open.
Well, they also got some drama that's about to come up whenever Odell Beckham comes back because people have really convinced themselves that somehow not having that guy makes them a better team. And the other thing I do think about Beckham coming back that will be interesting that we have to keep in mind is this is year 8.
Yeah.
Like, he's not young anymore.
Yeah.
And he's coming off of, you know, some injuries. I don't know what it ultimately looks like with him. I've always been, as a player, just a big fan of him. Because, look, yeah, what I see from him is, hey, guys, I'm excellent at everything. And I work really, really hard. But I'm excellent at everything. And your girl might want me. Therefore, I have haters at every turn. Yeah. And he's always seemed to deal with it. Like, the football people don't seem to have any problem with him. It's just writers that got the problem with him.
Yeah,
and so I always want him to do well.
I have players like that for sure. And Odell falls in that same category for me as players that I want to see him do well because he is excellent. And the hate or judgment that he receives, it never feels fair. Like, even that playoff game where they went to Miami before the game and ended up losing and dropped a bunch of passes. Like, the story around that was that Odell somehow blew that game by having a good time. Maybe they should have gone or maybe they shouldn't. It didn't matter to me, but it seemed the reaction to it was unfair. And it happens for guys. And Odell Beckham is that guy right now. And now saying, like, somehow this team is better with worse players, like, that to me, that has never made sense. It is not going to start making sense because Odell Beckham is a problem. Just his presence alone is going to cause defenses to have to adjust, and that makes this team better.
If Baker Mayfield can't figure out what to do because he got somebody good out there, then that's a Baker Mayfield problem, is it not?
They were saying like his personality is too big, so Baker's gonna force him the ball. That's gonna cause Baker to not go through his progressions. Like, now you're just reaching. And I think all of us are sometimes guilty of deciding what we want to believe and then looking for the justification of it afterwards. That happens to all of us sometimes. But when it's that ridiculous, you got to catch yourself. When it's so absurd that you're like, he gonna forget how to play football because this guy's personality is too big. Like, you got to really check yourself and say, do I actually believe this, or is this like some post hoc justification for some bias that I harbor against Odell Beckham?
Yes, that shrinking violet, Baker Mayfield. Yeah,
exactly, of all people.
The shrinking violet that is Baker Mayfield. Before we get out of here, I want to run this out here and just get your thoughts on it. Bubba said it at 17. Over under number of games Urban Meyer coaches in the NFL. Call 17 and a half. Yeah. There we go. 17 and a half. Yeah.
So is he going to be back next year? I'm going to go over.
Really?
Yeah. Based only on the fact that we already talking about it and he knows. He's just going to make it to game 18 so that he can say, I'm not that guy, because he already has his reputation. And the funny thing is, you would think that he's a made man as far as like legacy is concerned, even given all the bad stuff in his past, just as far as being a winner is concerned. If he does this walking away on a team again, like, that lingers, you know, like that is going to be the last thing we remember about him. So I imagine that's going to be part of it, unless it is about his health.
Well, that's the thing I was about to say, man. This job seems to kill him.
Yeah. He don't know how to do it without killing himself.
Yo, if he weren't so good at this, right? Yeah. If he had had an arc that a lot of people have, where your first couple of years, you struggle, and then year three, you start to pick it up, we would never have heard of Urban Meyer. Like, he has gotten it cracking immediately everywhere. He got it cracking immediately at Bowling Green. He got it cracking immediately at Utah. Took a year to kind of get it ramped up at Florida. Won a national championship. Undefeated first year at Ohio State, right? And then just kept it rolling. I think he lost 9 games his entire time that he was at Ohio State. If he was just a mere mortal and they had lost 12 games in that time period, Urban Meyer would have been quit long before if he got out early enough. Like, this causes him a level of stress that honestly it would probably cause most people to be in this job. But he just can't stay away, and then he comes back. And now in the NFL, where a 4-loss season is great job, he ain't built for that.
If they end up losing 4 times this year, oh, he's built for that. He'll figure that out. The thing about a lot of college coaches, they struggle in the NFL. I think the assumption is that they don't have better players. They don't get to recruit. Urban Meyer, obviously, Florida, Ohio State, loaded with great players. But Urban Meyer also was like offensive innovator guy. Like, he has the capability. So like, if somebody is built to survive in the NFL, like from a doing the job standpoint, Urban Meyer, I think, is a guy like that. However, he may not got the physical, emotional, psychological makeup to go through the pains that it's going to require for him to get there.
Dominique, that dude couldn't handle preseason losses. That's because your thought was mine, too, that like he's going to get here and recognize, hey, man, you just can't win them all at this level. Like, you know, like this conscious understanding that this is just a different place with different standards. That was the way that I felt at first until I started looking at him over there in the sideline during the preseason games. And I was like, hey, man, you know, this is just like a scrimmage, right? Like, these guys on the field right now, you're never going to see them again. You don't even know their names.
You don't think that he'll get some common sense beat into him? He got smashed this week. He's going to get smashed a couple more times. And then he's going to be like, oh, man, I can't win them all.
I would think. But the problem with Jaguars is he's going to be saying to himself, can we lose them all, though? You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. like he's okay with we can't win them all. Because, look, they got Denver this week. That's a game they should be able to win. Not saying they will, but they should be able to win.
No
chance.
Then
they got the Cardinals.
They got no chance to get Denver, but go ahead.
Okay, Cardinals, no chance.
Nope.
At the Bengals.
Yeah, they got a chance.
Against the Titans?
They got a chance.
Dolphins?
No chance.
By the way, Tua, step it up, young man. Seahawks?
I got no chance.
Buffalo?
No chance.
Colts?
Chance.
At Colts?
Chance. I'll give them a chance. Okay. We don't know what's going to happen with the Colts because their O-line not playing well.
Fair.
That's a problem.
49ers?
Nothing.
Falcons?
Chance.
I'm saying they need to wheel a cake into the locker room That could be victory number one. Rams?
No chance.
Titans?
Chance.
Revenge match against the Texans?
Chance.
Jets?
Chance.
Patriots?
No chance.
And the Colts?
Chance.
Dog, we only say they got one game that we think they go win. That's all we got is one.
So the thing is, teams get better throughout the course of the season. You got a rookie quarterback in the quarterback's most important position. He could get a lot better over the course of the season. So, like, I'm saying this based on what I saw this past week.
Yes.
And he's a volatile player. He gave us a lot of Jameis Winston in week one, where it was like, when it was good, it was great. When it was bad, it was funky. So if he can level this out, and maybe even the volatility means that he might have one game where he just throw for four touchdowns and no interceptions. Then the next week he throw one touchdown and three interceptions, and they might come up and beat somebody that they shouldn't beat. Cause I mean, they do have pros out there. Yeah. This ain't college. So they might win more games, but based on what I saw last week, going to be a long season.
I mean,
and Urban Meyer not built for this slow rebuild.
No, it's going to be hard. It's hard for Trevor Lawrence for the first time in his life. I'm not saying he's like some spoil some or whatever. I'm just saying he's so exceptionally talented and was on an exceptionally talented team where, like, when he threw that pick, I think I want to say it was on an out route against that cover two. And in college, I guess for him, the corner can't make that play when Trevor Lawrence throw the ball. No. Now they can. Like, everybody who goes from college to pros, I find that if they play any sort of back seven position or anything associated with that, like, what did you learn? Everybody's fast here. Like, that's what they say going from high school to college and then going from college to pro. It's a whole nother level. But nah, dog, everybody here is fast. The guys that we say are not fast, no, they're actually really, really fast. Vita Vea, kind of fast.
Yeah,
you just don't absolutely think about it that way, but kind of fast.
He don't look that fast compared to those other dudes, but he is blazing. Like, do you go from high school to college? All the people on the field were the best player at their high school, maybe one of the best players in their state. Then you go to the league. Everybody was the best player in their conference, best player on their team. Like, the talent is pretty impressive, and he'll adjust. He'll get better because he is exceptional. He's always been the best player everywhere he's been. He out here taking jobs in college off of nationally ranked teams, which just doesn't happen that often.
Yeah, man. Oh, boy. We got 17 more weeks of this.
One last thing. Mac Jones. Before the season started, I went on my Mac Jones tour because I watched his preseason games, and I was like, that boy going to be good. Because before the draft, I was like, man, nobody looking at Mac Jones. Yeah, he's special.
Really? I didn't get to see much of that game.
It's not even the numbers he put up as much as it's the way that he plays. He plays in a way that seems like he is outthinking everybody. What I think he's doing is probably narrowing it down to have one thing to worry about in the course of a specific play. But that whole learning process and that you get from experience, like, it feels like he skipped all of that. He's doing second level stuff already, which is impressive.
The thing I have to give him credit for that we didn't give him enough credit for is that when Tua got hurt that year, they didn't miss a beat. Like, the problems they had were not about offense after he, like, I think people misunderstood. I didn't think you traded up to get him, right? Like, when they were talking about trading up to number 3 pick in the draft to get him, I was like, that part was crazy. But I never know how to project a guy who's really solid in college, right? Like, I just don't know how to project. Like, I know how to project you're crazy athletic, okay, and you will improve right in these other areas, but I don't know how to tell where the solid guy is going to get better.
You're talking about watching him. You evaluated him as solid because his numbers weren't solid.
But he's the kind of guy where they'd be like, who do you compare him to? Tom Brady. Why? Because they both don't move. You understand what I mean?
Yeah, he doesn't do nothing special. Even the guys who don't move, who have enormous arms, you're like, man, I can see how that works. It's really hard to project somebody's ability to make the best of a situation, which, like, I think that's what he does that's really good, is he, with exception of the first play, he is going to make the best possible outcome in this situation. That's what's going to happen. And it's not going to be because of his arm or legs or anything like that.
No, he got to be Bret Hart, man. He got to hit you with that excellence to execution. Like, that's what this is going to be. Yep, like exactly. One day, somebody going to hear that I said this, and Mac Jones going to come out there with them old cheap sunglasses and go have his hair down to his shoulders, and he going to be wearing some pink, and it's going to be about the excellence to execution. By the way, if you did not know this before we go, Bret Hart, all the way down with the brown. And I don't just mean Black Lives Matter.
Really? I didn't know that.
Look it up. You'll be surprised. I don't know what part of Canada he from, but apparently he from the south side. the south side of Edmonton or whatever little place up there. Yeah, no, you're gonna look it up and you're gonna be like, I had no idea that Bret Hart got down like that. He was probably trying to get into the Nation of Domination and we had no idea.
He would manage to surprise me every week.
I'm just saying, Bret Hart one day gonna come up to The Rock and be like, hey man, I see what you out here doing, but you gotta be a little stronger for the people. Yeah, I know you want everybody to like you, but sometimes it ain't about that. Sometimes it's about us. It's about her. Yeah, man. She with me. Yeah, you didn't know that, did you? She with me.
I used to like the sharpshooter. Now I love it.
And ladies and gentlemen, that is Dominique Foxworth. Check him out here every Friday on Foxworth Friday. Always check him out on theundefeated.com and various television programs talking about football. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this three times a week. Gabe Bassan and Dave Presley handling everything behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.